Every few years, changing water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean create a climate pattern called El Niño. It wreaks havoc around the world, affecting the intensity of droughts, rainfall, temperatures, storms, and wildfires. This year, the El Niño is expected to be even more intense, creating what some forecasters are calling a super El Niño. To learn more about an El Niño cycle and how Wisconsin could be affected, we turn to Dan Vimont, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. Dan, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Also with us is Amanda Latham, a climate outreach specialist with the Wisconsin State Climatology Office. Amanda, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Dan, let's start with you. What causes a global El Niño phenomenon?
Good question. So that's maybe better understood by asking what is El Niño? And El Niño is a warming in the equatorial Pacific, so in the tropical Pacific. And it may seem like a long ways away, and that when temperatures get above about half a degree Celsius above normal in the equatorial Pacific, or maybe a degree Fahrenheit above normal in the equatorial Pacific, we classify that as an El Niño. And that may seem like a long ways away. It may seem like not very warm, but that is a massive amount of heat. It's the biggest ocean basin on Earth. You can imagine looking at a basketball. Think about the middle of a basketball. It's in the tropics. It's just a complete reorganization of the heat content of the entire tropical Pacific. So it is the biggest thing that can happen on year-to-year timescales naturally in our climate system.
And taking that information, because parts of the Pacific Ocean are expected to be 2 or 3 degrees Celsius warmer than average by the end of this year, with perhaps a super El Niño. Can you talk about how that might differ from a regular El Niño, Dan?
Yes, the forecasts are that this one's going to be a big one. And I think given the timing that we're at, where we're at now, given what the models are saying, it looks very probable that this will be a very large El Niño event, over 2 degrees Celsius in the averaged across the equatorial Pacific. So that means potentially more robust impacts, although that's competing against some other factors that may be impacting, that may be changing the way that El Niño affects us. So yeah, it's looking like a big one. The train's left the station on this one. It's already developing. It looks pretty likely that by the end of the calendar year, so next winter for us here in Wisconsin, we'll be in the midst of a pretty large El Niño.
Amanda, from your background previously working as a meteorologist, if this El Niño cycle develops to be one of the strongest on record, what could be some of the consequences in Wisconsin this year?
Yeah, we know that typically during El Niño winters, Wisconsin experiences milder temperatures. That's one thing that's been very consistent over decades of El Niño events. There's no real consistent correlation with precipitation, but if we're thinking about milder winter temperatures, that can, of course, change the type of precipitation that Wisconsin might see. So possibly rather than just snowfall from systems, we could see more wintry mixing, more icing, potentially more rainy winter systems coming through with those milder temperatures. And so with an especially strong El Niño, there's a chance that we could see especially mild conditions in Wisconsin this winter.
And we have been seeing record high temperatures in Wisconsin and around the globe. Are these high temps related at all to El Niño?
El Niño, as it affects a huge part of our climate system, the Pacific Ocean, has a big impact on our global temperatures. So we tend to see the warmest years on record immediately after an El Niño event. So 1998 was the warmest year of the 20th century. 2016 was a very warm year. That was after the 2015-16 event. And then most recently, the 23 event, 2024 was the that was a warm year. So we will almost definitely shatter the global temperature record in 2027 because of the strength of this El Niño event.
Amanda, how do warmer winters affect the health of, say, Wisconsin's lakes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So ice during the winter is very important for the health of the ecosystem, especially as we get into the spring season. It's important to have that lake ice melting so we have that cool water on top of the lake. We know that warm water rises, cold water sinks. And so when we have that cold water on top of the lake, it will sink down to the bottom of the lake through the spring and essentially just refreshes the lake. And that's really important for the health of the ecosystem. It brings oxygen and nutrients down to the lower levels of the lake. And so it's really important in keeping those populations really healthy.
Dan, you mentioned some competing factors to this particular El Nino or Super El Nino. What might influence it?
There's a couple of things that I like to think in the Midwest, there's kind of three major things that are affecting our, you know, the impacts that we would see. El Nino is one, climate change is another one. And then the third one is just the random year-to-year variations in weather that just naturally happen. And so when we have an El Nino event, I like to think of it as waiting the dice that we, as Amanda said, we tend to have a little warmer, more mild winters during El Ninos here. It doesn't mean that every El Nino will be that way, but the dice are definitely weighted in that direction. One of the things, though, that we found recently, and this is an area of research that we haven't fully explored yet, but it's looking like the climate change signal in the Pacific may be affecting the way that El Nino impacts the rest of the world. In fact, it may be counteracting some of the impacts that El Nino has on the rest of the world. Whereas a typical El Nino event might be associated with more predictable seasonal outlooks, climate change may be counteracting some of that ability to predict the impacts of El Nino.
We're talking about this year's potential Super El Nino. Dan Vimont there, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. And Amanda Latham is a climate outreach specialist with the Wisconsin State Climatology Office. Amanda, how long typically could the effects of a Super El Nino last?
Yeah, another good question. We know it typically lasts through the winter season and potentially into the spring. I was looking at some of Wisconsin's recent El Nino winters that we had and then looked at the following springs. Many of those springs were also warmer than typical. So in 2023 to 24, we had Wisconsin's warmest winter on record. That spring was also quite warm as well. And then I believe 1997 to 98 was a very warm winter in Wisconsin, and that following spring was also very warm. So as Dan mentioned earlier, it really impacts temperatures through the entire year, but it seems like in Wisconsin, we can at least count on those impacts through the spring, maybe potentially through the summer, depending on how long and how strong that El Nino lasts.
Dan, how could a Super El Nino affect, say, storms or droughts that the country could experience? I mean, right now we've been talking about potential a warmer winter here in Wisconsin. What about other weather patterns?
El Nino has a big impact globally, so not only in the U.S., but the tropics, not only in just North America, but the tropics, South America, Africa. In North America, El Nino has an effect on us because it affects the jet stream. So it's kind of like when you throw a rock in a pond, you see waves emanate outward from that rock in the pond. El Nino is an enormous rock in our global pond, and those waves we experience as shifts in the jet stream. So the jet stream tends to be more elongated across the Pacific Ocean, and that means that storms tend to propagate along that, and the West Coast tends to experience more storminess as a result. So you might see more storms hitting, say, California and the Southwest, wetter conditions across the southern U.S. as a whole as a result of that. And that might be a good thing given the drought of the last winter, especially in the southern U.S. And then, of course, beyond North America, El Nino has an enormous impact in the tropics, where it affects food security for potentially hundreds of millions of people. It affects health, heat in Brazil, potential impacts in dengue outbreaks. So there's a lot of ways that El Nino impacts our globe. And of course, being a globally connected society, we're affected by those sometimes indirectly.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, with your background as a meteorologist, what do you find alarming about the potential for a super El Nino?
Just how enhanced that it could be. You know, El Ninos in themselves aren't incredibly rare. They happen every few years, but just the enhanced warming that we're seeing in the equatorial Pacific is potentially concerning. And thinking about us specifically here in Wisconsin, milder winters really just impact so many areas of Wisconsin life, whether that's the ecosystem, the economy, agriculture. So even though it might be nicer for us to not have those big blasts of extreme cold, or if people don't like snow, maybe we have less snowpack in the upcoming winter. But really, we need those cold Wisconsin winters to uphold all of these parts of our economy and our lifestyle.
You mentioned two big areas, agriculture and our overall economy. Is there time to prepare for such an event in Wisconsin, or should our preparations be as we go and we see what unfolds?
I think there probably are some ways to prepare, especially when we're thinking about economically. I know that a lot of ski resorts have struggled in recent winters, especially in central and northern Wisconsin, where there's been less snow in the past couple of years. I know some ski resorts that haven't had to make snow in previous years have started to think about if they should start to implement snowmaking machines to help support their business. Some local snowplow companies perhaps diversifying their business a little bit more. Some have started to offer hanging holiday lights instead of just relying on the snowplow business. And so especially in the economy area, there are some ways to try to diversify, try to counteract these incoming impacts that we're expecting. But of course, that does also require the ability to get those snowmaking machines, ability to have staff to hang holiday lights or things like that.
Dan, what comes up for you? Yeah, as you think about preparation and an El Nino cycle.
Amanda has been part of revitalization of our state climatology office here in Wisconsin and is an outstanding resource for thinking about exactly this question. What should we be doing here in Wisconsin to be preparing not only for El Nino, but all kinds of day-to-day weather events, climate events, response to past events. And so I really want to just single out what a great job she and everyone at the State Climatology Office have been doing in turning that into something that's a real resource for Wisconsin. I love being outside in winter. I love the snow. I always say I want to be entering our building through the third floor windows, but it hasn't happened yet. And so when we get these warmer winters, it's kind of a bummer for me. I want to be out skiing. I want to be out enjoying this great climate that Wisconsin has to offer.
Well, Dan and Amanda, thank you so much for your time and for sharing this conversation about El Nino. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Dan Vimont is a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison, and Amanda Latham is a climate outreach specialist with the Wisconsin State Climatology Office and a former meteorologist. We've been talking about how scientists are keeping a close eye on the Pacific Ocean surface temperatures, anticipating a more intense El Nino cycle, and what the extreme weather events could mean for Wisconsin.